This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes.
Hi and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Matthew and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every meeting.
I'm Ruth, I'm an alcoholic. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, Ruth. So, what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomena of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and a thousand is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety, one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who's going to share their experience with alcoholism. So let's meet our guest. Hello, Ruth. Would you like to introduce yourself and give us a quick sketch of who you are?
Hi, I'm Ruth, and I'm an alcoholic. I have been sober for 7 years and 2 months.
Fantastic.
And I'm from in the South Island, lower down south, and I have two adult children, and I work in the professional field.
Fabulous. And so how old were you when you got sober, Ruth?
I was, how old was I when I got sober? So 7.5 years, in my 40th year.
In your 40th year?
Yeah.
And can you tell us a bit about when you started drinking and how it progressed?
Yes, so with my drinking, it I remember my first drunk was at my brother's wedding where I was about 14, I think, and I had a blackout. And so I didn't remember much at all. I had picked up a drink a couple of times before that, but my first drink I remember was that time. And then it wasn't until I was about 15 that I actually started picking up not every day. I ended up in a foster home where, you know, alcohol was kind of the norm. There was drugs, other type of drugs. So for me, my drug of choice was marijuana.
Right.
Alcohol made me too angry and I didn't like the person I became at that early in sobriety. So even I didn't know I was an alcoholic at all until I came into AA. But going back to that time and just thinking about it, it was I suppose subconsciously I knew there was something wrong with me. I didn't know what it was. I didn't fit in anywhere. It was that square peg trying to fit in the round hole. It just wouldn't fit. And I was a loner. Always got picked on a lot at school, so I was like a chameleon.
So how was your childhood overall?
My childhood was good. My parents, it was dysfunctional though. It wasn't... you know, and I hear it a lot, like back in the days when, you know, your parents, you know, do as I say, not as I do, and you know, not much communication, not much love, not much, for me anyway, that was my perception.
Right.
You know, other family members might have had a different perception, but that was my perception. And I felt that I didn't feel that love.
Right.
And I felt a lot of hurt. I had a bit of dysfunction. My parents split up. My mother remarried, so there was a few issues around her remarrying that didn't sit with me. So, and that's when things started kicking off, teenage years and that as well, sort of at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you felt uncomfortable. You felt maybe that there's something wrong about the way that you were drinking and using of marijuana, but you it was a bit confusing. You didn't really get it. When did you start to really feel it was a problem, and did you ever try to stop, Ruth?
So I had my baby young, so that was a godsend, really. And because the years that I was heavily drinking were my, you know, mid-teen years. And but I'd switch from drinking to drugs, and there was all types of drugs.
Right.
There was glue sniffing. There was, you know, everything. Trying to make myself, my feelings numb.
I see.
Because I was hurting. I hated the world.
Okay.
You know.
So
and
you use chemicals in a sense to medicate pain.
Yeah.
Discomfort.
Yeah. Because I didn't want to feel it. I didn't. Yeah. And I didn't know how to cope.
So with all of this happening, what actually made you realise that you needed help? Did you have a rock bottom that you could describe?
I had a couple of rock bottoms. So many, many years after that, many years in my 30s, I moved up to Christchurch. And it was kind of around about 2000, end of 99, I hit an emotional rock bottom, absolute emotional rock bottom.
Was that a depression or...?
It was depression. It was my state of life. It was just everything. Everything was bad. Everything. Right. And I was in the victim mentality. You know, I completely had the poor me.
Okay.
So the big chip on the shoulder.
A loss of hope. Oh, yeah. And you were cross.
Yeah, angry.
Angry.
I was an angry drunk.
Right.
You know, and Yes, and I used to have quite a good mouth when, you know, when I was drunk.
Right.
That's when, you know, everything would freely come out and I'd tell you what I thought of you.
Right.
But then I'd cross over to that blackout and then I'd get told what I'd actually said. And it was like, no way, I wouldn't have done that because me thinking I'm such a nice person, how could I say that sort of thing? Or, you know, or waking up the next morning thinking, oh, where am I? You know, not knowing, you know, whose bed I was in or whatever. And
I've had that experience. It's very confusing.
Yeah.
Ruth, have you ever lost any jobs, relationships with family, friends and loved ones through your drinking?
Not lost, but I kept my family at arm's length so they wouldn't know what was going on. They never knew and they really don't know to this day what I was like.
Okay.
And I don't share that much unless there's an opportunity that comes up that I can help someone in my family that will relate, then yes. And I've had instances of that in this last year. So, yeah, it's only when the opportunity comes up. And I had to go through a lot of shifting the shame and the blame and all that. You know, there was a lot of work through the steps that had to be done to get me
shifting
well.
Shifting the shame?
Yes. I felt shame my whole life on who I was or just this emotional, very hard to describe. I think I'm not a person for words, so, yeah, but it just felt like a heaviness. I didn't want to lift my head up. I didn't want people to see me because I was scared.
Right.
I was scared of getting hurt again, you know, and I was wounded. And that alcohol and the drugs would just keep me numb so I wouldn't feel
that makes
those
sense.
Feelings.
Yeah. So, Ruth, how did you find your way to your first AA meeting and what was that like?
Well, funnily enough, it was through a pastor and he took me through the first three steps. I'd had probably another rock bottom. It was a realisation, and I had this moment a few months ago, this aha moment. It's that feeling of you've been a dick, and it's the feeling of what have I done, and it's just this like remorse feeling of, you know, sickness in my stomach that I realised that there was actually something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And so I went and spoke to this person and he gave me a name in the fellowship and that's how I ended up at my first meeting because I just felt repulsed at what I had become.
I see.
Yeah, I wasn't an everyday drinker. I was a binge drinker. Mm-hmm. So when those feelings would build up, that's when I used to call it my release. It was my release. And, you know, that where you talked about fun before, I thought giving up alcohol, I'd have no more fun because I used to either drink or drug or whatever. You know, it was Friday night, party night. And over the years, that kind of ended as my friends sort of I moved away from and that sort of thing. But I remember distinctly that was a thought that I had. If I give up drinking, there's going to be no fun. You know, I'm going to lose my friends. Mm. All these sorts of things. But it hasn't happened.
Mm.
It hasn't happened.
That's so very good to hear.
Yeah.
So when you got to AA, when you got to that meeting, how did you feel you were treated by the other AA members?
It was an amazing experience. I still remember walking in there, head down, wouldn't look up, looked to see, you know, with the person I was with, sat right beside them. And then I started hearing the sharing and I was blown away by the honesty and the similarities.
Mm-hmm.
We're always told to hear that, listen for the similarities. And I didn't get that at the start because I was comparing myself to everyone else. But then I started picking out, oh, they wet their bed as well. Oh, okay. And they're actually talking about it.
Mm.
I just couldn't believe that they would talk about the situations they were in when they were drunk because, you know, I could never stick at things. And I was, when I walked in, my perception was, oh, I wonder how long, you know, how long it will take before I get bored of this.
I see.
And it was, you know, and then after that first meeting, it was like, oh, am I going to hear the same thing every week and every night? Like, it took me it took me 3 months to actually get it, to get into AA and do 90 meetings, 90 days, as it is suggested, because it's a disease of perception, and my perception was way off.
So when it sounds like when you first arrived, even in those first early meetings, there was actually a strong sense of relief for you.
Yes. I identified. It felt like I was at home.
You were able to identify. Right, yep. A homecoming.
Yes.
And that must have been quite nice after so many years of feeling like you were in isolation.
Yeah.
You know, and you were a square peg in a round hole. And whatnot.
It was. It was
good place to start.
I felt a weight lift off my shoulders because it's like I'm not the only one.
I see. That's good. So, Ruth, have you managed to stay sober?
I have.
How have you managed to stay sober? Would you describe the process?
Okay,
of
so
your recovery?
From the November 2011 to the February the 8th or the 7th 2012, I didn't commit to meetings. I didn't get I had a sponsor, but I didn't commit to meetings. I was doing one a week. After my last drink on the 7th of February 2012, it was like, okay, I've got to get real about this.
I see. And a sponsor's a recovering alcoholic who takes a new recovering alcoholic through the steps, isn't it?
That is correct. That is correct. And the steps are what got me well and keep me well.
Okay.
The meetings keep me sober.
I see.
The more meetings I do, it calms my head down, it calms that chaos, the insanity. If I don't go to a meeting, it's my will, you know, because there is a higher power that that I came to terms with. It's and that puts a lot of people off, but, you know, please don't let it put people off, because it's a higher power of your understanding.
Right.
Not anyone else's.
Ruth, how important has service been as part of your recovery?
Service is very important. I have a position at the moment. I have had a position probably since that February.
I've always had
something, even if it's just the tea and coffee. I've always had something.
Okay, since you decided you knew you had to take this thing quite seriously and really commit yourself to it.
Yeah, because it's an action program.
And can you describe what, you know, like what sort of service is?
Service is many things.
In the context of AA, you know, to
AA,
support your recovery, yeah.
So service, there is service positions available in meetings. So it's chairperson, secretary, treasurer, and tea, coffee, and that sort of thing. But there's also service and sharing. Sharing your experience, strength and hope, so that newcomer can hear that similarity that I heard.
Yeah.
And it gives them hope.
And it gave you relief, didn't it, as well?
Yes.
Whew.
Yeah.
And you felt like you'd come home.
Yeah.
How would you describe yourself and the life that you've got today? It sounds like you felt, you know, not great about yourself when you came into AA. How do you feel within yourself today?
I feel great. It's what's called the promises on page 86, I think it is, and in that it talks about the miracle.
That's of the Alcoholics Anonymous big book.
Yes, and
the promises.
Those promises are when I first heard them, it was like, yeah, I hope so. I hope I get that, a life beyond my wildest dreams. And it is. I have everything I need today. I have financial security, emotional security. I have emotional sobriety. That is the one thing I heard way back when in my first year, was that emotional sobriety, instead of going up and down in the emotional waves of poor me, oh, this is great, poor me. I'm now at balanced. I still have days now and again, but then I have to take the action.
That's a big change, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's a really big change. So it sounds like since you became sober, your life really has changed quite a bit. Has there been changes in your career, home, travel?
Home has been massive changes in my home. I've been married 5 years this Friday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. To a recovering alcoholic as well, which I never thought I would be married again, especially to a recovering alcoholic, because, you know, it's amazing. He works his recovery, I work my recovery. I can communicate well. I don't go into my codependent behaviour, which is, you know, part of working the steps and working out who I am, of finding who I am. It's a journey, not a destination. Work that has changed immensely over the years, and it's amazing. It's beyond my wildest dreams.
Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous, Ruth. How have your relationships with friends, family and loved ones changed since you've been in sobriety?
I don't judge like I used to. I accept them for who they are. That acceptance is a big thing. It's the key for me today of accepting people, places and things how they are today. And, you know, it's the way it has to be. Otherwise I get disturbed. I get myself wound up. I used to get really wound up. I don't anymore, because it's, you know, I've got to trust my higher power that I handed over and I let it go. I've learnt how to let go, and that was very hard.
Would you say, sorry to interrupt, would you say that you are endeavouring to and having some success with trying to control the people around you less than what you may be used to?
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely. I was a great controller.
Right. And you're finding your life is more successful and pleasant in your relationships when you surrendered a lot of that and you're doing that a lot less.
Yes.
So you take your responsibility for yourself more, maybe.
And it's looking into myself and what is going on with me, not looking at others. It's taking my eyes off them. You know, the three fingers pointing, you know, the one finger pointing at the other person, there's three pointing back to you. So you got to look at yourself.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're feeling disturbed, what is it in me?
That sounds like a bit of wisdom there. Ruth, what are your goals for the future for yourself?
Keep coming to meetings.
To continue being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Oh, yes, because we've got to give it away to keep it.
Yep.
We have to. Otherwise, you know, this started, what, in 1935, and if we don't pass it on, you know, there's a legacy there. There's traditions, there's, you know, the steps traditions, there's concepts as well, and that's what AA is. It's unity. And I have to be an active member of the fellowship for that to continue.
Yeah. It's very hard to be cogent when you're having blackouts, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
And you haven't had one of those for a while.
Oh, no, and it's a great feeling. It is great not to, because I still remember those, you know, and that's the one thing. It's as long as I don't forget my last drink, because, you know, there's the fear of I'm only one day away from picking up a drink. You know, it could be tomorrow. Who knows?
Yeah.
And that's why I keep coming to meetings, because that reminds me I'm an alcoholic.
Mm.
And, you know,
this thing's for life, yeah?
It is life. It's life. Mm. But when I first came in, I couldn't think of it like that. It's one day at a time. You know, 7 years, 2 months later, one day at a time. That was my approach, and it's still my approach.
Mm.
It's one day.
That is marvellous. Ruth, thank you so much for coming on to the show and sharing your story with us.
You are most welcome.
It's been a pleasure. For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are 66 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show is every Monday at 6 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.
Everybody's talking at me, I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare, I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going